AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Krueger, spicing new topics every single weekend, jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, and we have another UFC event this weekend. UFC Vegas 111 goes down. The main event, Gabriel Bonfim versus Randy Brown. If you thought last weekend's card was random, this one takes it to even more unseen levels. This one is literally main evented by a man in Gabriel Bonfim who has one ranked win over Wonderboy Thompson, which is a questionable decision, and Randy Brown, who, if you'd asked me in the great year of 2024, around December time, will Randy Brown be getting a main event in 2025? I would say you're crazy. There's no way. And lo and behold, we are getting that. And the co-main event is Matt Schnell taking on Joseph Morales. You may be like, who is Joseph Morales? Well, he actually won the Ultimate Fighter the last season for the flyweights, and Matt Schnell is somehow still in the UFC. But we have 13 new fights to bring to you guys. We're going to drop our predictions, go through each and every one, and we've been on this streak of going 7-5, 7-6. We need to break the mold. I haven't been on fire since UFC Rio. Now, I haven't gone negative in couldn't even tell you how long, which is a pretty good sign. So we'll just stick with that, and we'll be going through it all on today's episode. As well, we'll be dropping our quick picks for the NFL week number 10. We're looking to come back in very intense form this week for fantasy and for predictions. But before we get into that, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to talk about the updated UFC rankings. And I do want to address these betting allegations. And here's the thing with the UFC, it's an easy sport to rig. It's also a very tough sport to rig. And the reason that is because sometimes, people are actually getting knocked out, actually getting submitted. And that's where it draws the lines between what was a thrown fight and what was just an actual fight where someone fought bad. So there's going to be definitely a big investigation into this. My thoughts right now, definitely the Isaac Dalgarian and Yadier Devalel situation is very odd. They released Isaac Dalgarian, which makes me believe they think he was involved with it to some degree, but they don't think Yadier Devalel was. I really don't know. And then it would raise the questions, are the fighters who are winning in on it? Are the fighters who are losing the only ones in on it? It's all up in the air. So we'll have to see what happens. I will cover it to a degree, but as far as, knowing exactly what's going to come from it, I couldn't even tell you because it's always up in the air. But I can tell you what I do know, and that is the UFC rankings have updated following UFC Vegas 110, and we have a couple of updates to bring to your guys' attention. First up, women's bantamweight division, Norma Dumont passes Caitlin Vieira. She has now won 6 straight fights and is now ranked number 3 in the world. I think her next two opponents are either going to be Hakeem Pantin, ranked at number 2, or Julia Pena at 1. I would personally like to see Julia Pena fight her, but I don't really know. There's rumors Kayla Harrison is going to be taking on Amanda Nunes. That feels like it should be next. But if it's not, then it's going to be Norma Dumont. And I think Norma Dumont gets eaten for breakfast by Kayla Harrison. So Norma Dumont now ranked at number 3. As for Caitlin Vieira, she's ranked at number 4. I think Caitlin Vieira should take on Eileen Perez. I think that's the next fight you should do. She's ranked at number 8. She was supposed to be my biggest riser of the year, as we talked about in the last episode of the pod, in terms of the women's bantamweight division. And after getting a ranked win in the top 10, she just hasn't gotten a fight the rest of the year. So we'll see what happens with the women's bantamweight division. But in terms of any more big fights for the year, maybe Yana Santos has a fight. I can't even remember. I don't even think so. Maybe Misha Tate does. I know we're going to be talking about the number 10 and number 11, Maribel Silva and Jacqueline Cavalcante. But other than that, not much going on. Women's flyweight, nothing really at all. We are just awaiting the inevitable Zhang Weili Valentina Shevchenko double title fight, which does go down in 10 days, which I am very excited for. Other than that, nothing much. Nothing else. I do believe Macy Barber and Karine Silva have a fight coming up as well in November. So we'll see what happens on that one. For women's strawweight, nothing. Nothing. There is no movement in the women's strawweight division. I think Angela Hill may have a fight booked against Fatima Klein. We're going to be talking about Denise Gomez and Tisha Pennington, but as for the top 10, nada. And in terms of the women's pound-for-pound, Norma Dumont replaces Caitlin Vieira at number 15. Good for Norma. She is now in the women's pound-for-pound rankings. It is weird to think that Norma Dumont is technically one of the 15 most dominant women on the planet. I don't know if that's the case, but she is in the UFC's eyes. Moving on to the men's heavyweight division, despite winning, Waldo Cortez Acosta does not move from his number 6 spot. I thought they'd have thrown him a bone, had him pass Holton Almeida, but he's planted in there securely at number 6. Ante Delaje remains at number 9. In terms of what's next, I think the number 9 ranked Ante Delaje should fight not too far down. I would like him to maybe take on the number 11th ranked Shamil Gaziev, the number 12 ranked Ty Tuivasa when he returns, number 13th ranked Mick Parkin, dare I say Volter Walker. Feel like that could be a fun fight. They could even give Talashan Teixeira another shot, or they have him fight up again. Him versus Sergey Spivak also feels like a doable fight. As for Waldo, you know, the options are kind of bleak, but I think right now it's either Curtis Blaydes at 4 or Holton Almeida at 5. Both possess a grappling challenge. I would maybe just go with Curtis Blaydes just because Curtis can't really fight up, you know, with a split decision win over Rizvan Kuniev. So we can run that, maybe a main event, maybe on a, you know, pay-per-view main card in early 2026. That's what we can do. Light heavyweight, no updates whatsoever there in terms of the next big fight. Han Blachowicz at number 5 has a fight coming up with Bogdan Guskov at 11. That's going to be super exciting at UFC 323, and that's about all that we got. For the middleweight division, I know the 14th-ranked Marvin Vettori is taking on the unranked Bruno Ferreira. There is rumors that Sean Strickland and Anthony Hernandez, the number 3 and number 4-ranked fighters, will be a early 2026 fight night main event, and besides that, no other updates. Welterweight, we obviously have a lot of matchups currently taking place. We have Jack Della Maddalena taking on Islam Makhachev, the number 1-ranked Bilal Muhammad, taking on the number 6-ranked Ian Geary, the number 4-ranked Leon Edwards, taking on the number 9-ranked Carlos Prates, and the number 2-ranked Sean Brady, taking on the number 8-ranked Michael Morales. So a lot of movement in the top 10. Some people I want to highlight in the welterweight division, which are not having much movement, might I say, Gabriel Bonfim at number 14, shout out for getting a main event, but Gilbert Burns at 11, Colby Covington at 10, and Kamaru Usman at 5, nothing going on, especially with Colby. Dude, I have no idea how he's still ranked number 10. There really isn't an explanation. He needs the fight soon. I mean, I've lost all faith in him, but, you know, that's what's going on in the welterweight division. Lightweight, I know Benoit Saint-Denis and Emil Dariush have a little fight booked. Of course, Dan Hooker is going to be running it with Armin Sarukian. And besides that, nothing much. Justin Gaethje has said that if Paddy Pimblett gets a title shot over him, or even the winner of Armin Sarukian and Dan Hooker gets a title shot over him, he will retire. And Justin, you've had a great career. I don't really think you're in a position to be making those demands, nor will anyone be clamoring for you to not retire. So that's an odd decision there. For featherweight, it's where we have our last changes. Steve Garcia jumps 4 spots up to number 8. That is right. He passes Brian Ortega, Josh Emmett, Gene Silva, and Patricio Pitbull, moving upwards. David Onama drops 1 spot from 13 to 14 as they give Danny Ige a little boost. And this is a big tell for Steve Garcia, and I had said his next opponent should be Arnold Allen at 6. It just writes itself. And you know, Arnold Allen is ranked at number 6 and hasn't fought since UFC 304. That was in July of 2024. It has been way too long. Steve Garcia and Arnold Allen would be a great boxing matchup. That's what you should do next. As for David Onama, an unranked opponent. Yeah, that's what you do next for David Onama, unranked opponent. Or maybe him versus Gene Silva. That could be a fun fight. Bantamweight, no changes. Flyweight, no changes. And as for the men's pound for pound, I just wanted to compare who the number 15 is in the women's pound for pound. Like we said, Norma Dumont. For the men, it's Charles Oliveira. There are levels to the men's and women's pound for pounds, and the men's is clearly more superior. But those are all the new ranking updates that we have. Not too many. You know, I'll say that, not too many. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, but, you know, especially after this weekend, it's going to be bleak. There is not going to be many changes after this current fight card, which kind of, you know, kind of bums me out because I love talking about all the changes in the divisions. But speaking of changes in divisions, NFL week number 10, we were over halfway through the NFL season, and it's going by quick, but it's also going by at a pretty steady pace. You know, I will say, now that I'm 23, now that I have a job, I kind of lose my interest in the NFL. You know, it was fun in college. You know, you gather around with your boys every Sunday, watch the game, but now it's like every time I go out to a bar, you know, I have fun, but it's like you're spending money, and then it's like, am I really going to let a sports team dictate if like I'm happy or not happy? And most of the time, I don't even care if the Vikings win or lose. It's my fantasy team. So we have 14 matchups to predict for week number 10, and I will be taking my fantasy team into account to an extent. But overall, you know, on the year, we've gone 83-51, so we're plus 32, which isn't too bad. We are in the top 288,000 for the nation on ESPN, the top 79.1 percentile. So we're going to try and turn that frown upside down. You know, week 9 we went 8-6, in week 8 we went 5-8, in week 7 10-5, in week 6 9-6. So week 7 10-5 was one of our best weeks, but nothing'll top. What was it, week 2 I went like 15-1, one of my greatest weeks ever. So let's do it this week. Week 10 we're about to go 14-14 on our predictions, kicking us off Thursday Night Football. The Raiders visit the Broncos, and the Broncos are big favorites, minus 650 over the plus 425 Raiders. And, you know, this Raiders team really has a lot going for them. Ashton Jeanty is going to be a stud. Brock Bowers is the best tight end in the league. But other than that, I mean, great defense, too, might I add. But the issue is, they just don't have a good, like, leading team. I mean, I'm sorry, Geno Smith, but you were good for the Seahawks, but Geno Smith can't really just come in and regain chemistry. No, and this Raiders team is 2-6. They are, you know, teetering in the bottom half of the league. They're nearing minus 100 negative point differential, and there hasn't really been a difference between their home and away performances. So I'm going to be very curious to see how the Raiders perform against the Broncos here, because Broncos have been on an absolute tear. This is going to be the first time they play. They will play again December 7th. And, you know, divisional matchups always lead to upsets, but in this case, this Broncos team has been so impressive. 6 straight wins, 4-0 at home, 7-2 on the year. And after winning against the Texans, you know, in just great fashion, I mean, this team has just been on a roll. Been on a roll. Their only losses so far this season are to the Colts and the Chargers, which are, you know, two decently aged wins, especially that Colts one. So I am going to go with the Broncos here. I will be rooting for Ashton Jeanty to tear it up. Maybe even Cortland Sutton. I might start him, but certainly Ashton Jeanty, Brock Bowers, love both of them so much. So best of luck to them, but I do have to go with the Broncos. Moving into our international games, 8:30 a.m. on for Central Time, that is, on Sunday, Falcons visiting the Colts. And if there's ever going to be a time for the Falcons to beat the Colts, it's going to be overseas. Now, this has been a up and down year for the Falcons, and after starting the year 3-2, they're now 3-5. And have just not looked good. You know, they just, you know, last week was such a winnable game against the Pats, and then their kicker missed the extra point to tie the game. Before that, they had been blown out by the Dolphins, which made no sense. And then after starting hot against the 49ers, they just faded off. But this is also a team that beat the Bills by 10 and beat the Commanders by 13. But this is also a team that has been shut out 30-rip by the Falcons. This is also a team that beat the Vikings 22-6. You never know what you're going to get with the Falcons. And when it comes to volatility, we're not going to pick that. What we are going to ride with is the 7-2 Indianapolis Colts. 5-0 at home. This is technically a home game for them. And after losing to the Steelers last week in a game where they actually almost came back from, this was more of just a defensive masterclass by the Steelers and really a defensive rattling, which really set in for the Colts as they had 6 freaking turnovers. For goodness sakes, I don't think that's going to happen against the Falcons. I'm taking the 7-2 Colts to move to 8-2. Next up, the Giants will be traveling to Chicago to take on the Bears, and this is a very interesting matchup here. You know, the Giants, 3 straight losses, 0-5 on the road, but Jackson Dart has been phenomenal. He really has, and after losing Cam Scadabo, which really sucks, you know, Devin Singletary stepping into a role, Tyrone Tracy Jr. stepping into a bigger role, and in terms of the wide receivers, you know, Jackson Dart really loves his tight ends, Theo Johnson, another guy, and Wandale Robinson just hasn't been able they get it going so much. So I don't really know what to expect from this Giants team. I will say I really like them as a plus 180 underdog. But the Bears, you know, it's always up or down what's going to happen with them. They've gone 2-1 at home, 3-2 on the road. So in terms of who I should rock with, I'm going to be honest. I have DJ Moore. But I also have Jackson Dart starting a league. I think I'm going to start Jackson Dart over Jalen Hurts. I just got a feeling that the Giants are a good upset to pick and that the Bears, they survive the Bengals, but it would make sense they lose to the Giants. It just seems like how the Bears play. So we're going to go with the Giants to beat the Bears a little plus 180 underdog action. I love it. Next up, the minus 600 Bills visit the plus 400 Miami Dolphins. Now, most people would write this off, but I tell you right now and here is that the Bills are known to play to the level of their competition at times. Now, that can be beating the Chiefs by 7, beating the Panthers by 31. It can also be losing to the Falcons by 10, losing to the Patriots on a game-winning field goal. So you never know what you're going to get with the Bills. But for the Dolphins, yeah, it's been a rough year. Really rough year. 2-7, suffering another loss to the Ravens last week on Thursday Night Football. Their only wins are over the Falcons and the Jets. So, yeah, we are going to pick the minus 600 Bills. Easy money, but Devin Achane. You know what? Do your thing, Devin. Do your thing. Next up, the Ravens visit the Vikings, and my Minnesota Vikings at home are plus 180, and I wrote them off. I said, you know what? There's no chance they beat the Lions. The Vikings season is going to be bleak, and what do you know? They win by 10. Vikings only have a minus 4-point differential. They're 4-4, and this is really a must-win game for them because being 4-5, like I am in my big 16-man fantasy league, is much different than being 5-4. Because, you know, when you're 5-4, you technically will only fall into a hole at 5-5. But if you're 4-5, you got to work 2 games out to get out of a hole. You kind of get what I'm saying. So I really, really am rooting for the Vikings here. I will be picking them at plus 180. But the Ravens, man, the Ravens, 3-5, 2 straight wins. Momentum is on their side. And to be fair, 1-2 on the road, we haven't really been able to find a pattern. All I know is the Vikings defense is probably going to get shredded by Lamar, so it's going to take J.J. McCarthy, Jordan Addison, Justin Jefferson to really amp it up. So most people are riding with the Ravens, but at home, my Minnesota Vikings, plus 180, got to ride with them. Next up, the Browns will be visiting the Jets in this next matchup, and the Jets no longer have Sauce Gardner. So the Browns are probably going to eat them alive, but this is a battle of two of the worst teams in the league. Browns are 2-6. I mean, 0-4 on the road. So similar to the Giants, I think they get their first road win this week. And as for the Jets, they're 1-7. They're 0-5 at home. Their only win is over the Bengals, which is just so comedic. And yeah, they're just coming off a bye. So we are going to go with the Browns to beat the Jets. This Jets team just cannot get it done, and I can't bring myself to pick them. Sticking with our noon slate, Patriots visiting the Buccaneers, and Patriots 7-2 at plus 125 are on the road against the Bucs as underdogs, and the Buccaneers are coming off a bye. I mean, this is really baffling to me. Patriots are 7-2. They've gone 4-0 on the road. They're on a 6-game winning streak. This feels like a betting trap. It really does. This is really a betting trap, and it's kind of crazy to me. Buccaneers are 6-2. They've gone 2-1 at home. Last time they played, October 26th, they beat the Saints 23-3. Now, their only losses on the year are to the Eagles and the Lions, which tells me all I need to know about how good this Buccaneers team is. And as for the Patriots, I kind of played the who'd they play last week? The Patriots played the Falcons pretty close, and, you know, the game could have been won, but unfortunately they missed the extra point. So the more I've talked about it, the more I've thought about it, I'm going to go with the Buccaneers. I'm going to say Baker has a good bounce back week because he didn't do too hot last time out against the Saints. He only got like 4 fantasy points. So we are going to pick the Buccaneers over the Patriots. Little switcheroony here. I guess I can't have the Colts, Broncos, and Patriots all winning. One of them's bound to lose at some point. So Buccaneers over the Patriots in a last-minute switch. Noon slate continues as the Saints visit the Panthers. And this Carolina Panthers team is really good. I'm fairly surprised with them. Now, I am no longer a Cam Newton fan as he has been doing some weird antics off the court or off the field. Of course, he's no longer in the league, but I do represent him with the Panthers. Panthers are 5-4, 1-game winning streak. They've gone 3-1 at home. They picked up a good one last week. I mean, it really was. Beating the Packers in Green Bay is no easy feat. And when I look at their losses, the Bills, the Patriots, the Jaguars and Cardinals, not that best. So those ones are kind of rough, but it was early in the season. So really going to give them the benefit of the doubt. As for the Saints, 1-8, 0-4 on the road, 4-game losing streak. And I don't think they even know what they're doing. So Panthers over the Saints, and I do kind of like the Panthers, so I am happy with that. Next up, the Jaguars and the Texans. This one, flip of a coin. Flip of a coin here. Jaguars on the road are minus 120. Texans at home are plus 100. The Jaguars may not have Brian Thomas Jr., but they did just add Jakobi Meyers. Very good ad. And there is word that CJ Stroud may be in concussion protocol. So monitor that, because I don't think Davis Mills is cut out to lead this team. Texans did suffer a defeat last week to the Broncos at home. But before that, they had beaten the Texans at home. So very interesting with this Texans team. Very up and down. Now, as for the Jags, they're 5-3. Coming in with some momentum. They did just have a bye week, similar to, you know, not the Texans, but, you know, similar in general to, like, the Buccaneers coming off a bye. So I'm maybe feeling the Jaguars win here. Jaguars just kind of strike me as a team that's going to be, like, 7-4, and you're going to be like, how are they 7-4? It doesn't make any sense. So Jaguars minus 120. I just feel like Texans plus 100 at home is a trap. Without CJ Stroud, I really don't feel confident picking Davis Mills leading this team. 3:30 slate is up next. Seahawks, Cardinals. Yeah, give me the Seahawks. This Seahawks team is really good. They really are. And one of my saddest things is I don't have Jaxon Smith-Njigba in my main league. I have him in two other leagues, but it doesn't feel the same. Actually, I think I only have him in one league, but I discovered him last year. I credit myself with that, and he is the number one fantasy wide receiver. And the Seahawks team is playing phenomenal ball. 3 straight wins, and they're 6-2. Top of the NFC West, which is a battle right now between Seahawks, Rams, and 49ers. So, now's the time to make a run if you're the Seahawks. And the Cardinals, perfect team to play. They suck. They really do. I actually have no idea how they beat the Cowboys. I couldn't even tell you how they beat them, but they did. I think that's just the Cowboys at the end of the day. Talk about a team that is lucky to be on a bye. So Seahawks over Cardinals, but like I'm going to say, these divisional games, that's where you always tend to see some upsets, but I'm not picking an upset. I got Seahawks winning. Next up, the Rams visiting the 49ers, and there's word Brock Purdy may be back, which would really make me lean towards the 49ers, plus 190 at home. I mean, come on. What are we doing here? These two teams already played October 2nd. It was an overtime win with a field goal for the 49ers. And since then, you know, it's kind of been up and down. But as for the Rams, they have not lost since that encounter. Knocking off the Ravens, knocking off the Jags, and knocking off the Saints. Only allowing a total of 20 points scored over their last 3 matchups. Now, I will say, that Ravens team, no Lamar. Really rough showing with Cooper Rush. The Jaguars matchup, just a rough showing. It's the Jaguars. And might I add, the Saints game, it's the Saints. So I'm feeling this 49ers team. They're healthy. Don't sleep on them. 49ers at home. I like it. Rams, I think they're going to lose here, and a lot of people are going to be shocked. That minus 225 is just a bit too high for me. I'm going to go with the 49ers. Christian McCaffrey, continue your tear. Next up, with our final 3:30 game, the Lions visit the Commanders. Little rematch of the playoffs last year in the NFC, and yeah, we're picking the Lions. We just lost Jaden Daniels. Marcus Mariota is not beating the Lions. So Lions over the Commanders, it doesn't even matter. Commanders are plus 340, but without Jaden Daniels, they're just not going to find success until he returns. And for the Lions, look, don't judge them too much. They lost to the Vikings. It's a divisional game. Especially in the NFC North, every matchup is close to an extent. So yeah, Lions over Commanders, I'm confident in that. And finally, for our Sunday slate, we have a Sunday Night Football matchup between the Steelers and the Chargers. Steelers visiting the Chargers. This one is really big for me because I have multiple Chargers players, so I will be rooting for the Chargers. But the Steelers, man, just knocked off the Colts after an awful performance against the Bengals. They now look prime against the Colts. And for the Chargers, I mean, they're 6-3. 2 straight wins, looking good, but I won't lie. The Titans played them kind of close, which does make me kind of think the Steelers, plus 125 on the road, are going to beat the Chargers. And I would rather pick the Steelers and have the Chargers go off than vice versa. So Steelers over the Chargers. You know I got to sneak my underdog predictions in here when I can. I like that pick. I really do. Then getting into Monday, the Eagles visit the Packers, and after watching the Panthers win, I can tell you that it does not matter who plays at Green Bay. You can still beat this Packers team, and I think you're going to see another loss for the Packers here. I think they're going to fall to 5-3-1, because I got to go with the Eagles here. I really do. There's a potential that Saquon Barkley may be out, which would open the door for me, who has Tank Bigsby to start him. Ooh, wouldn't that be epic? I also have Devonta Smith, who I will be rooting for heavily. And for the Packers, I just do not have any single player from their team. I'm not a Packers fan. I'm a Vikings fan, and I actually need them to lose. And judging by what I'm looking at here with my predictions, I would have the Lions moving up to the number one spot in the NFC North, and the Vikings moving up to the number three spot, which would give us an opportunity to maybe make the playoffs. So I'm going to go with the Eagles over the Packers here. Eagles 6-2, two-game winning streak, and you know, I think they're you know a little well-rested after their bye week, which kind of hurt me because I didn't have Devontae Smith to pick up the load other players can't pick up. So those are your Week 10 NFL predictions. Let me know who you guys are going with and how many total points will we score on the Eagles versus the Packers. I'm going to say a 30-17 victory for the Eagles. Give me 47 for the total. I wonder if I win anything if that's the case, but with that, ladies and gentlemen, we are now going to drop our official predictions and preview for UFC Vegas 111. We got a lot of matchups to talk about with you guys. And is it the most exciting card? Absolutely and not. But we're going to try and gas it up as much as we can. We've had a lot of changes. You know, there's been a lot of added fights here and there. I don't know if some fights have been taken off or if they're still on here. But this is the current slate. I don't know if UFC Stats is actually updated all the fights. It is Wednesday, though, so maybe I should check and see, because right now there's a fight between Jackson McVay and Robert Valentine listed, and that fight's not appearing on the site. So I'm going to do a quick little check here, because, I mean, it would appear that that fight was still on, and wow, this is actually breaking news live on the pod right now. This was just announced a couple minutes ago. How does this happen to me? How's it happen? But Jackson McVay, who was slated to take on Robert Valentine, is now taking on Zachary Reese. Zachary Reese was recently kicked in the nuts by Cedric Dumas and couldn't continue. Or I think it was the opposite way around. But yeah, Jackson McVay versus Zachary Reese. Huh. I can't believe that. Well, there's not much to really say here, since it's not listed on UFC stats, but Jackson McVay is 6-1, lost his UFC debut to Bruno Vera. Zachary Reese is 9-2. Only losses are a slam finish by Cody Brundage, comical, and a knockout loss to Azmat Bekov. He recently fought Cedric Dumas. It was a no contest. And yeah, I'm going to go with Zachary Reese here, because we share the same name. No, I am familiar with Zachary Reese. Jackson McVay didn't live up to much, but this should be a round one finish for Zachary Reese. It should be pretty close, or back and forth. I feel like they're going to go at it right from the jump, so yeah, other than that, everything else appears to be in order. Now that I'm looking, I'm not seeing. This card has undergone a lot of changes, guys, as you can hear. But Adrian Yanez and Christian Quiñones, I am not seeing on this card, which is a bit of concern for me. Where has this fight gone? I don't know. So I don't know if I can cover it, actually. Let's go do a little bit of research on Tapeology, see if we've had any fight cancellations, because I don't know what's going on. This card does start a bit early. Prelims are starting at 3 o'clock on the East Coast, which means we are going to be getting some early fights. And as of right now, it has Jackson McVay listed to fight Dante Johnson. So I have no idea what is going on. Adrian Yanez, Christian Quiñones withdrew. Robert Valentine had a back injury. Luis Santos and Melissa Kronga. Dude, guys, I don't know what's going on, but this entire card has been reshuffled. I took notes on a Monday, and now it's Wednesday, and I'm recording. So clearly, that wasn't the smartest decision. Right now, it says Dante Johnson's fighting Jax McVay. I don't think that's right, but whoever Jax McVay fights, I am not picking. Alrighty, all fiascos aside, we open up the card in the men's bantamweight division as Miles Chapo Johns takes on Daniel Soncora Marcos. And Miles Johns coming in 15-4 with a no contest. Daniel Marcos 17-1 with a no contest. Both men are 5'7", 1 inch in reach for Daniel Marcos, and both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. Miles is coming in, 31 years old from Dallas, trains at Fortis MMA with a lot of good talent, and of his 15 wins, only 6 finishes. 4 KOs and 2 subs. Of his 4 defeats, he's been finished twice. He's a decision machine. He really is, and amidst all these weird cancellations, he was actually supposed to fight Muin Gafurev, but Muin Gafurev pulled out, so in will step none other than Daniel Marcos. But Miles Johns has been with the UFC since 2019, actually won on Season 3 of the Contender Series. Would come in, lose to Mario Bautista by flying knee, pick up two great knockouts, get submitted by John Castaneda, wins a decision here, get an overturned loss here, win two straight decisions, but then since December 2024, he has yet to win. Decision loss to Felipe Lima and a close split decision, you know, loss to Gene Matsumoto in August, which was kind of an eye-opener that Miles Johns can actually fight. So Miles Johns tends to bring it. He always is, you know, down to fight, but he hasn't won since June of 2024. And it won't be easy as he takes on the 17-1 Peruvian Daniel Marcos. The 32-year-old was born in Peru, but now fights out of Florida. Of his 17 wins, he has 8 KOs. And funny enough, he was actually supposed to fight Felipe Lima. Oh my goodness, these two weren't even supposed to fight, and now they're fighting each other. Daniel came in undefeated to the UFC, got a massive finish in early January of 2023, but since then, kind of won a bogus decision over Davy Grant, had a no contest against Al Gorquin due to a low blow, won a unanimous decision against John Castaneda, and then his last victory came in December of 2024, winning a split decision over Adrian Yanez. And then he finally fought someone good. He fought Montel Jackson, and Montel Jackson whooped his butt. 30-27s across the board in that matchup, but he's back. Daniel Marcos is back, looking to bring it in. I don't want to hate on him. I do think he is talented. I do think he has capabilities to be good, and I do think he's going to beat Miles Johns. Miles Johns just hasn't really shown me anything that makes me say, wow, look at this guy. And while Daniel Marcos hasn't either, I do think Daniel has fought in a tinge higher level of competition. So Daniel Marcos over Miles Johns, that's my second prediction of the night behind who's ever fighting Jackson McVay. We're picking against him. Moving on, we get some ranked competition. You may be like, oh my gosh, ranked fighters. It's ranked women's strawweights. Yippee, I say, as the number 15th ranked Denise Gomez takes on the number 13th ranked Tisha Pennington. Tisha Tiny Tornado Pennington is 15-7. Denise D. Gomez is 11-3. 1 inch in height for Denise and 3 inches in reach as well for her, as both women fight out of the orthodox fighting position. Tisha is the underdog here at plus 170. Denise is the minus 225 favorite. Tisha Pennington, of course, the wife of Fakhril Pennington, if you love lesbian fighting couples. Tisha is 36 years old from Colorado. Of her 15 professional wins, she has 1 KO. And 1 sub, and she's never been finished in all 7 of her professional fights. That's right. This is the biggest decision machine you will ever see in the UFC. She's worse than Vivian Araújo. If you know, you know. Now, she came into the UFC over a decade ago. 2014, she's fought in Angela Hill, Rose Namajunas, Michelle Warson Gomez, Jessica Andrade, Zhang Wei Li, you name her. She has fought in them, and she hasn't lost since May of 2024, which is pretty good. She lost to Tabitha Ritchie, and she actually retired Carla Esparza in October of last year. Her last win was over Luiana Pinheiro in May, where she was able to survive the grappling to pick up a decision thanks to her striking. So Tisha Pennington riding a bit of momentum in, but the one thing she doesn't have a momentum in is her age, as her opponent Denise Gomez is 11 years younger at 25. Born in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, she has transitioned to living and training out of Las Vegas. Of her 11 wins, she has 7 KOs, and of her 3 defeats, she's only ever been finished once. Denise Gomez debuted in 2022, coming off of Season 6 of the Contender Series. She would drop a decision to Loma Luke Boonmi, who, by the way, recently lost to Alexa Thanera. She would follow that up with 2 knockouts in 2023 before ending the year with her last loss to Angela Hill by decision. Since then, she picked up a win in June of 2024, winning a split decision over Edward Moore. Oh, I guess her last loss was 2023. Wow. She would then beat Carolina Kowalski in November 2024, and her lone fight this year in May, she TKO'd Elise Reed 30 seconds into round number 2. Tisha Pennington, as an underdog here, is very good. I think all women underdogs are always good to pick, but 11 years younger, coming in off a knockout. Yeah, give me Denise Gomez over Tisha Pennington. Also not a fan of Tisha Pennington. I don't like decision fighters like her. Next up, heavyweights. Oh my gosh, and the crowd goes nuts as we have Josh Hokit taking on Max Jimenez. Who are these guys, you may be asking? Good question. Josh Hokit is 6-0. Max Jimenez is 6-1. Josh Hokit is a very light heavyweight. When he weighed in for the Contender Series, he was 238. Last time Max Jimenez weighed in, he was exactly at the heavyweight limit, 265. Orthodox stance for both of these fighters, and lo and behold, Max Jimenez is no spring chicken. This man was born in April of 1983. That is right. This man is 41 years old, according to UFCstats.com. Now, Tapology had him listed at 32, so I ain't got no idea how old this man is. He's either 32 or he is, he's either 32 or 42. I would assume 32, but just guessing in my opinion. But Josh Hokit coming in, won on season 9 of the Contreras series. Last time he fought, August 2019. The 27-year-old is from California, and all 6 of his wins have came by finish, 3 KOs and 3 subs. He went 2-0 in Bellator, 3-0 in LFA, and then won his Contreras series fight. Impressive work. He is the minus 400 favorite against Max Jimenez. Max Jimenez, I don't know a thing about him, but he's apparently 32. He's a plus 300 underdog. He's from Maryland. Currently riding a 4-fight winning streak. Of his 6 wins, he has 5 finishes, 4 KOs and 1 sub, but his 1 defeat was by knockout. His last win came in March. Now, when I watched Josh Hawkins fight on the Contreras series, I did not think he could hang with some of the heavyweights out here, but clearly the UFC has gone out and hand-selected a guy that he should beat. So whether he is able to, whether he's not able to, I do think Josh Hokit can get this done simply because they are handing this guy a win on a platter. So we're going to go with Josh Hokit. He has a very take you down, ground and pound sort of style, almost like a Curtis Blaydes, but he wasn't the most impressive on the Contender Series, if I'm being honest. So we'll see how he does against Max Jimenez. Don't know a single thing about Max Jimenez, but you're about to watch two future prospects in the heavyweight division go down, I guess. By the way, it is a division that is in dire need of new fighters. If you love ranked contenders, well, guess what? We're going back to a women's division. The women's bantamweight division has the number 10 ranked Mayra Bueno Silva will take on the number 11th ranked Jacqueline Cavalcanti. Mayra Bueno Silva, the plus 205 underdog, is 10-5 with 1 draw and 1 no contest. The minus 250 favorite, Jacqueline Cavalcanti, is 9-1. 2 inches in height, go to Jacqueline Cavalcanti, and a notable 4 inches in reach, 70 inches to 66. Orthodox stance for both fighters. Mayra Bueno Silva, one of the biggest fall-offs in recent UFC women's history. The 34-year-old is from Brazil, and of her 10 wins, has 8 finishes, 1 KO and 7 subs. She has gone 5-5-1 in the UFC. So that's right. She did come in undefeated 5-0 and has since run into a bit of trouble here and there. She was actually supposed to fight Jocelyn Edwards on August 9th, and that fight fell apart, sadly. So instead, Jacqueline Cavalcanti will get a chance to rise the rankings. Mayra Bueno Silva came into the UFC and, was kind of on a tear. Won on season 1 of Dana's Contender Series Brazil. Came into the UFC, submitted Jillian Robertson in round 1. Would then lose a fight of the night to Marina Moroes, which was just a good fight. Followed that up with a round 1 armbar. Have a draw against Montana De La Rosa. Then lose her first official, just regular fight. But that was to Manon Fiora, who was currently on her run to a title shot. She would then have a fight of the night against Wu Yanan, submit Stephanie Yeager with an armbar, submit Lena Landsberg with a knee bar, land a main event against Holly Holmes, and submit her 38 seconds into round number 2. Now, little did we know, Mayra Bueno Silva was on what we would call the juice, and her win was overturned. But nonetheless, she was already slated to get a title shot, and she did when she took on Tisha Pennington's wife, Hawkwell Pennington. She would go out there in round 1 and dominate her, taking her down twice, ground and pounding her, looking good, and then she gassed out and did nothing for the rest of the fight. And since Hawkwell Pent is, like her wife, a decision fighter, nothing happened. One of the worst title fights in UFC history. She followed that up with a TKO loss to Macy Chison in 2024, where she got cut so bad, like the ref just had to stop the fight. Her last fight was in Saudi Arabia, February 1st of this year, where she got grappled to death by Jasmine Jasu Davicius. So it's been a rough going for Mayra Bueno Silva. She technically doesn't hold a win since February of 2023. It's been a rough going, and it doesn't get much easier as she takes on the surging prospect, Jacqueline Cavalcanti. 28 years old from Portugal, is currently on a 7-fight winning streak. Of those 9 wins, she has 3 KOs. Now, she's coming to the UFC, 4 wins, 4 decisions, beat Zara Fiern in her debut in 2023. Okay. Won a split decision over Josian Nunez. Not the best, but a split decision win over Nora Carnole in September 2024. That's a good win. Her last fight was in February of this year, where she beat Julia Avila by decision. Now, She hasn't looked the most impressive, but I will say she has been on a tear. She has been winning, and I don't care if this is wrong by a mile. I'm really hoping she wins. Like, I'm picking Jacqueline Cavalcante. We cannot afford a prospect to get turned back again. I'm hoping for the Triple H authority. This is what's best for business, if you get my reference there. So, Jacqueline Cavalcante, best of luck. I do think she'll bust out a decision here, but nonetheless, we'll see how it goes. We were then supposed to have Adrian Yanez versus Christian Quiñones. That fight has since been canceled. If it does get rebooked because Christian Quiñones pulled out, I am picking Adrian Yanez every day of the week. So I'll just circle him. If we do find out that Adrian Yanez is back and you listen back to this, I am going to pick Adrian Yanez. If the fight's canceled, that just sucks. But that fight would have gone down in the men's bantamweight division, and that's actually where we are for our next matchup as Ricky Simon takes on Ryony Barcells. These two men have had a pretty decent year. We'll talk about their records in a second. Ricky Simon, or their 2025s in a second, but their records. Ricky Simon, 22-6. Ryony Barcells, 20-5. 1 inch in height for Ryony Barcells and 2 inches in reach for Ricky Simon. Orthodox stance for both of these fighters, and oddsmakers have it -175 for Simon and +145 for Ryony Barcells. We'll start with Ricky Simon. Ricky is 33 years old from Washington, the state. He has 11 of his 22 wins by finish, 7 KOs and 4 subs, and of his 6 defeats, he has been finished 3 times. He has a stellar record in the UFC of 10-5, and after going on a little 3-fight losing streak, including a main event loss to Song Yedong, a bad loss to Mario Bautista, and an even worse loss to Vinicius Oliveira, he has since gone 2-0. In 2025, he has one of the best knockouts of the year against Javed Bastrat back in Seattle, and when he fought in Atlanta in June, he knocked off Cameron Smotherman, grappling him to death. He probably couldn't have finished Cameron in that fight, but honestly, he was just bullying him. Ricky Simon is actually the last fighter to have actually defeated and finished Merab Dvalishvili in weird circumstances. He also holds wins over Montel Jackson, Ray Borg, Rafael dos Santos, and Jack Shore. He's pretty freaking good, and he's been on a tear. 2-0 in 2025. He's looking to cap off his year with another win as he takes on Ryony Barcells. A similar man who started his year knocking off the hot prospect Peyton Talbot and then beating Cody Garbrandt in June. Weirdly enough, that was also on the UFC Atlantic card. His win streak is at 3, though, as he holds a submission win over Christian Quiñones, oddly enough, in February of 2024. His last loss was August of 2023 to Kyler Phillips. Now, Ryony Barcells is pretty decent, I will say. He is 38 years old, so 5 years older from Brazil. Of his 20 wins, he also has 11 finishes, 8 KOs and 3 subs. Of his 5 defeats, he's only ever been finished twice, so if Ricky Simon can knock him off, that would be pretty impressive. He's gone 9-4 in the UFC, and some losses, Umar Nurmagomedov, Timur Valiyev, and Victor Henry. Very interesting. He also holds a win over Saeed Nurmagomedov. Very good name to have on his record. This is going to be a very competitive matchup, but without Ricky Simon's fighting, I'm not picking against him. I do see a ranked opponent next for whoever wins this, and as I look at the men's bantamweight rankings real quick, number 15th ranked Marcus McGee or the number 14th ranked Kyler Phillips just called out to me. They really do. I could even see the 12-ranked Rob Font, but really with Marcus McGee, I think the winner of that and him would have a fun contest. So Ricky Simon over Ryony Barcells, maybe by finish, but probably thinking a very grapple, maybe a bit of striking decision victory. Moving along, we go from bantamweight to featherweight as Haider the Hurricane Amiel is back to take on pretty boy Jamal Emmers. Haider Amiel and Jamal Emmers are both -115. This is truly a toss-up for who will win. Haider Amiel is 11-1 professionally. Jamal is 21-8. 1 inch in height for Jamal Emmers and a notable 4 inches in reach. Orthodox stance for Emmers. Switch stance for Haider Amiel. Amiel is 35 years old from California, and 7 of his 11 wins have come by finish. 6 KOs and 1 sub. He's gone 3-0 in Bellator and 3-0 in the LFA. He wound up in the UFC thanks to the Contender Series in 2024, where he would start off with 2 straight knockouts. He would then get the biggest win of his career, defeating William Gomez by split decision earlier the year in March. He would then take on the surging prospect Jose Delgado, who would knock him out in 26 seconds, showing there truly are levels to this game. So, Haider Amiel, last fought in June, knocked out by Jose, but Jose Delgado is an absolute savage. That is not a bad loss to have on your record. His opponent, Jamal Emmers, is 36 years old from California and has 12 of his 21 wins by finish, 9 KOs and 3 subs. Of his 8 defeats, he's been finished 5 times. He was supposed to take on the prospect Austin Bashir, so I do think this Haider Amiel matchup is a tinge more favorable, but not by that much. Jamal Emmers has been win-loss since the year of 2020. He has found some notable names, Julian Arosa, Giga Chikadze, Pat Sabatini, Jack Jenkins, Nate Landrieu, which was his last loss in March of 2024, kind of a who's who of the unranked of the featherweight division. His wins, Vince Cachero in 2020, Kusan Ashkabov in 2023, Dennis Pachukcha in 2023, and his last win, a four-minute knockout of Gabriel Miranda in Mexico City in March. Look, Gabriel Miranda, not an impressive win to have. That guy is awful, and I do think Jairo Muil has great knockout power, and I do think he's going to get up in Jamal Emmers' face, mix him up a bit. If not, he's going to outbox him to a victory. Give me Jairo Muil over Jamal Emmers. They're kind of very similar, both in their mid-30s, both from California. Very interesting. Moving up to the middleweight division for our next matchup. We're on the main card now. Christian CLD, Leroy Duncan, takes on Marco Matuto Tulio. This is going to be a fantastic matchup, guys. Christian Leroy Duncan is 12-2. Marco Tulio is 14-1. 2 inches in height for CLD, 6'2" to 6', and 5 inches in reach. 79 inches to 74. Switch stance for CLD, orthodox for Marco Tulio. CLD is the plus 120 underdog in this, as Tulio is closing as the minus 150 favorite. Christian Leroy Duncan is 30 years old from England. Of his 12 wins, he has 9 KOs and 1 sub. Been with the UFC since 2023. He came in undefeated before losing his first fight to Armin Petrosian in July of 2023. He would end the year with a bang, knocking out Dennis Tallulah, and he would start out his March with a win over Claudio Ribeiro. He would then run into a decision loss against Gregor Rodriguez at UFC 304, but after taking the rest of the year off, would come back winning a unanimous decision, actually, over Andrei Puliev in March. His last win in August, he knocked out Eric Anders in dominant fashion in under 4 minutes. He's looking to bring that power in here when he takes on Marco Tulio. Marco Tulio, oh my goodness, the 31-year-old is from Brazil and trains at the same gym, Chutebox Diego Lima, as Charles Dubronx Oliveira. Of his 14 wins, he has 10 KOs and 1 sub, and he was originally supposed to fight Michel Pereira in China. Unfortunately, he definitely would have gotten the win there, but unfortunately, that opportunity went to Kyle Daukaus, who, after Kyle sees it, now has a big matchup coming up soon. He's currently on a 10-fight winning streak and actually had to fight on the Contender Series twice to get it done. He had a very lackluster win over Yuzri Belgori on Season 7. They brought him back for Season 8, and he got a spinning back kick knockout. That'll do it. He debuted in January, knocking out Ior Patera in 3 minutes, and would then utterly dismantle Trayshawn Gore in April. That actually might have been attempted murder. So after watching both of their last performances, this is going to be a firefight. I honestly could say either man will get this done, but from what I saw, Marco Tulio, the guy is here to fight. He really is, and I have seen hesitation from Christian Leroy Duncan. I'm yet to see hesitation from Marco Tulio, and the fact that he was able to go into round number 2 and still bring the intensity shows me he can go far, maybe even 3 rounds. I am going to go with Marco Tulio. Moving on to our lightweight matchup of the evening, Chris Taco Padilla takes on Ishmael Marreta Bonfim. Chris Padilla is a plus 165 underdog and is 16-6 in his MMA career. Ishmael Bonfim is 20-5 and is currently your minus 215 favorite. 5'9 to 5'8, 1 inch in height for Chris Padilla and 3 inches in reach. 74 inches to 71 for Chris Taco Padilla. Orthodox stance for both of our fighters. Taco, what a fun nickname for the underdog Chris Padilla, who is currently 3-0 in the UFC. The 30-year-old is from California and overall is on a 6-fight winning streak. Of his 16 wins, he has 13 finishes, 8 KOs and 5 subs. Of his 6 defeats, he's been finished 3 times. Yeah. Very interesting. Very, very interesting here. Won over James Lontop in April of 2024. Rear naked chokehold. Then got an injury stoppage against Rong Zhu. Rong Zhu had a cut. He then fought Jai Herbert in March and won a split decision. I didn't think he won, but oh well. But Chris Padilla hasn't done much. He really hasn't, and I'm a little surprised at how stellar his record is, but I think that changes when he takes on the man, the myth, the legend, the younger brother of the man in the main event, Ishmael Bonfim. 29 years old from Brazil, 13 of his 20 wins are by finish, 9 KOs and 4 subs. All of his losses he has been finished in, once by knockout, 4 times by submission. Now, this man came in off the Contender Series, fought Terrence McKinney at UFC 283, one of the best knockouts of the year, a flying knee knockout. He would then take on Benoit Saint-Denis, who was just too high level for him, all right? He would submit him. He would then fight Vink Pichel, and for the life of everyone, no idea how he didn't finish Vink Pichel. Really faded deep in that one, and then came back in February of this year, took on Nazem Sadikov, and unfortunately just had his nose broken with a high kick. But he was looking somewhat decent, actually, over Nazem Sadikov, who is literally one of the hottest prospects in the lightweight division. I absolutely love that guy. So, Ishmael, I know you're kind of gone win-loss, but your losses are Benoit Saint-Denis and Nazem Sadikov. I think he is not only better than Chris Padilla, I think he gets a round one submission of Chris Padilla. Actually, maybe even knockout, dude. Let's go knockout round one for Ishmael. I just highlighted Chris Padilla. I did not mean to do that. You can also check verdict. I believe it's the Zach Ruger, your official Zach Ruger. One of the two. You can find me on verdict. That's where I post all my actual predictions. But yeah, we are not picking Chris Padilla at all. No, no, no. Getting into our final three fights of the evening. Usually I'd be like, oh, this is the top three fights, but no, that's not the case. But don't worry, guys, we're gonna get rewarded next weekend with UFC 322. That's legit the best event of the year so far. But we now have a welterweight matchup between Muslim Salikov, the king of kung fu, self-proclaimed, as he takes on the doctor, Euros Medic. Muslim is 22-5, Euros is 11-3, 6'1 to 5'11, 2 inches in height for Euros and 1 inch in reach as well for Euros, 71-7. Southpaw with that left for Medic, orthodox for Muslim Salika. Muslim is a plus 170 underdog yet again. In the UFC, Euros Medic is the minus 205 favorite. Muslim Salika, the legend continues. It really does. Dude is just ageless. 41 years old from Russia, has 17 of his 22 wins by finish. 14 knockouts, 3 subs. Of his 5 defeats, he's been finished 4 times. Muslim has been with the UFC for 8 years now, since joining in 2017. He has gone on 5-fight winning streaks before losing to Li Jingliang. He's had crazy knockouts of Nordin Talib, Andre Fialio, and as of late, 3-fight winning streak, including back-to-back performance round 1 knockouts. Fought earlier in the year in July and knocked out Carlos Lille, who was a hot prospect coming in 42 seconds. His last loss, February 2024. Randy Brown, who was in the main event. How about that? But yeah, Muslim has had actually a pretty decent run in the UFC. He's 9-4, not too shabby. He has gone 4-3 in his last 7, but since July of 2024, yet to have lost. And the man he's taking on, Euros Medic, knows a thing or two about some ups and downs in his career. 32 years old, he is 9 years younger than Muslim. However, he is from the same region of Serbia, but has since transitioned to Alaska. He has never been the distance in his entire 14-fight career. 9 KOs and 2 subs make up his 11 wins, and of his 3 defeats, he has been submitted twice and knocked out once. Joined the UFC in 2021, round 1 finish, then gets finished in round 1. Then goes on a little finishing streak of Omar Morales and Matthew Selmsberger, then gets neck cranked by the debuting Mike DeBakorobot. Then knocks out Tim Means in 2024, then gets knocked out by Punahele Soriano in 31 seconds earlier in January. But he last fought in August, and after getting dropped in the opening exchange, would go on to knock out Gilbert Urbina in impressive fashion. So, Euros is coming in, a lot of momentum, but I will say, he has fought twice this year. He's been dropped in both contests. And I think somehow Muslim, who's been an underdog in his last 3 freaking fights, is going to get another round on knockout. Muslim just has this knockout power, which makes no sense. And when you're a guy like Euros Medic who leaves your chin out there, he's going to capitalize. So I'm going with Muslim Salikov to get a round 1 knockout of Euros Medic. I cannot wait to see that come to fruition. And this is where we would usually pause like a video if it's being recorded and go, that did not happen. Muslim was actually face plant knocked out. But that's not going to be the case. So going with Muslim Salikov over Euros Medic as a plus 170 underdog at 41 years of age. Getting into our co-main event, I will say, you may be seeing someone get a ranked title shot. Not title shot, what am I saying? A ranked matchup with a win here, and that man would be Joseph Morales. But we'll have to see. The co-main event features Matt Danger Snell, former ranked fighter, taking on the Ultimate Fighter season, I want to say 34 winner, Joseph Bopo Morales. Matt is 17-9 with a no contest. Joseph is 14-2. 2 inches a night for Matt Schnell and 1 inch in reach as well for him as he fights in the orthodox fighting position. Joseph Morales is a switch stance fighter. Matt Schnell, plus 200 underdog, nothing new. Nothing new for him. As for the Ultimate Fighter winner, Joseph Morales is a minus 250 favorite. Matt Schnell is 35 years old from Louisiana. 11 of those 17 wins have came by finish, 2 KOs, and his notable go-to, the 9 submissions. Of his 9 defeats, he's been finished an outstanding 8 times, including 5 by KO, 3 by sub. He has gone exactly 7-7 in the UFC, and if he loses here, I do think this will do it for him. Look, Matt is 1-3 in his last 4. Matt is also 2-5 in his last 7. He has not had the best of luck. You know, came into the UFC 9 years ago, had to fight Rob Font. Gets knocked down. Then gets knocked out to Hector Sandoval. No idea who that is. Then goes on a little nice 4-fight winning streak before running into, in 2019, the current men's flyweight champion, Alexander Pantoa, who knocked him out in round 1. After going through some ups and downs, including losses to Brandon Royval, Mathusin Nicolo, Steve Ersig, and Cody Durden, he would finally pick up a win in April of 2025. Beating Jimmy Flick. That fight sucked. That fight was gosh dang awful, but son of a gun, Matt Schnell ended up winning. That's all that matters at the end of the day. Now, it was a close fight, I will say, but Matt Schnell was hunting for submissions, and that's what gave him the victory. So, he has that going for him as he takes on Joseph Morales. Joseph is 31 years old from California. He currently rides a 6-fight winning streak and has 9 of those 14 wins by finish. 2 KOs and his go-to, 7 subs. Of his 2 defeats, he's only ever been knocked out once, so that was actually Deiveson Figueiredo, funny enough, back in 2018. And, you know, that's crazy. That's crazy. Last time this man was knocked out was Deiveson Figueiredo. Last time he lost was in November 2018 as well in the UFC. He would leave the UFC and after being away for 7 years, would come back to win the Ultimate Fighter, getting a finish in every single fight. He would actually get a round 2 triangle choke over Albie Idris back at UFC 319 in August to secure the Ultimate Fighter crown. And you know what? This is a good opportunity here. This is going to be a submission affair, and I am obviously going to pick Joseph Morales. I would think you'd be pretty silly to pick Matt Schnell, but to be fair, none of the Ultimate Fighter winners have really been breaking ground. I don't think many people even know who won last year, if I'm being honest. And when I think about it, who even won alongside Joseph Morales? Like, wait, who actually, Donachenko? Did he end up winning? I think he might have. I can't even remember. The Ultimate Fighter is such a joke now. But yeah, in the co-main event, Joseph Morales, what an opportunity for him. Really, I know it's a bummy car, but still, they could have easily thrown Muslim Slikov versus Medich. They could have thrown Ishmael versus Chris Padilla. Even Ricky Simon, Ryan Barcelos makes a lot more sense, but no, they go with Joseph Morales and Matt Schnell. That does bring us to our main event, which, funny enough, like most nights, this might not even make the main card, but in this scenario, it is the main event as the number 14th ranked welterweight contender Gabriel Martina Bonfim takes on Randy Rude Boy Brown. Gabriel Bonfim 18-1, Randy Brown 20-6. 2 inches a night for Randy, 6'3" to 6'1", and a notable 6 inches in reach, 78-72. Orthodox stance for both of our fighters. Right now, Gabriel Bonfim is at minus 180 as the favorite. Randy Brown is the plus 140 underdog. Gabriel Bonfim, 28 years old from Brazil, is of course the older brother of Ishmael Bonfim. Let's actually check. Gabriel Bonfim was born in 97. When was Ishmael born? Ishmael was born in 95. Well, I'll be darned. He's actually the younger brother, despite being bigger and taller. It's always funny how that works out. So, actually, Gabriel Bonfim is the younger brother of Ishmael Bonfim, but it is kind of cool they both get to fight on the same card. Gabriel, as I was about to say, has 3 KOs and 13 subs, 16 of his 18 wins. Are by finish. Him and his brother and his whole family have their own gym in Brazil, which is super cool. And sadly, this fight was actually supposed to go down in Rio, but it got rebooked. So, you know what? Best case scenario, you can't fight in front of your hometown. You actually get bumped up to being a 5-round main event. Gabriel Bonfim debuted at UFC 283, just like his brother, and he got a 49-second submission. He would follow that up in July of 2023 with another round 1 submission. At the end of 2023, he would unfortunately suffer his first defeat, losing a fight the night to Nicholas Dalby where he gassed out towards the end of round 2. But he fixed that, went the distance with Zanz Lusa to prove he can go the distance. And so far in 2025, submitted Cass Williams and defeated Wonderboy Thompson in July, which was a very close split decision win. I know it's up in the air, but I picked him, so I was happy that it happened. But Wonderboy Thompson, low-key deserved that win. Like, low-key Wonderboy fought his way back from the pits of despair and Man, guy sucked. He did get it done. But hey, Gabriel Bonfim ate some shots, and even in round three was throwing harder shots. So clearly, dude is game and ready, and he rides his three-fight winning streak, 18-1 record in against a UFC 14-6, 20-fight veteran, Randy Brown. 7 years older at 35, he fights out of New York and has 13 of his 20 wins by finish, 8 kills, and 5 subs. Of his 6 defeats, he's only ever been finished 4 times. Randy Brown has been fighting 9 years in the UFC. He's been fighting, he's been clawing, he's been trying to, you know, get an opportunity. I mean, the best he's ever been able to do is make it on pay-per-view main cards. Like, that's the highlight, like being like the second or third fight in, but no. Randy Brown, after the knockout he had in April over Nicholas Dalby, one of the best knockouts of the year and one of the best fights of the year, has landed a main event. To be fair, if I'm being honest, this dude, Randy Brown, has just been on the bad side of bad luck before. I will say his UFC losses, Bilal Muhammad, Vicente Luque, Jack Della Maddalena, and Brian Battle. And I think everyone can kind of agree he probably should be on a 5-fight winning streak, because that Brian Battle fight probably should have gone to him. On his little winning streak, though, had that been happened, he also holds wins over Muslim Salikov. He's also beaten Chaos Williams before, Alex Oliveira, Walray Alves, you know. He's kind of, you know, he's the unranked guy that you have to beat to actually prove yourself. Kind of funny that he hasn't fought in Kevin Holland yet. I think a lot of people thought Kevin Holland and him was the next fight to make, but no. Instead, he gets a main event opportunity against Gabriel Bonfim. And just like last week, you know, I thought David Onama wasn't ready for a main event. I don't really think Randy Brown is going to be ready for a main event. I think Gabriel Bonfim takes him down in round one and submits him. Gets him out of there with a guillotine choke and really stakes his claim. So I got Gabriel Bonfim over Randy Brown. It would be super cool if Randy Brown won, but you know, it's even just weird to say like these two are in a main event. It doesn't even make any sense. But you know what? Good for both of them getting this opportunity. I can't even hate. So that is our little preview and predictions of UFC Vegas 111. And you guys may be like, oh my gosh, this card sucks. Why would we even get it? I don't know why we're getting it, but I'll tell you what we are getting. November 15th. And I'm going to read this card top to bottom. Bossinger Sursakaev is back for his second fight post-Dana White's Contender Series Season 9 win. This man is becoming one of the hottest prospects in the middleweight division. We also have ranked women's strawweights between Angela Hill and Fatima Klein. We have an unranked featherweight banger between Pat Sabatini and the returning undefeated in the UFC, Chepe Mariscal. Kyle Daukaus is back off of his highlight reel knockout of Michelle Pereira to take on GM3 Gerald Meerschaert. Malcolm Wellmaker is back after his fantastic knockout at UFC Atlanta. Top 5 women's flyweight action as Erin Blanchfield takes on Tracy Cortez. And by the way, Tracy Cortez was the last woman to beat her before she joined the UFC. Ranked middleweight action as Roman Kopylov and Gregory Rodriguez look to bounce back after Roman lost to Paulo Costa and after Gregory Rodriguez lost to Jared Cannonier. Bo Nickel takes on Rodolfo Vieira and was booted from the main card. Good stuff. Bo Nickel did not belong in the main card, because you want to know what's on your main card. Beneil Dariush and Benoit St. Denis, top 15 lightweights, top 10 welterweights, Leon Edwards, Carlos Prates, undefeated 18-0 Michael Morales taking on 18-1 Sean Brady in the welterweight division. This is potentially the highest level welterweight matchup you will ever see. Women's flyweight double championship opportunity as Shang Wei Li moves up in weight to challenge Valentina Shevchenko. And in the main event, Islam Makhachev looks to make Khabib proud to become a double champion in the men's welterweight division as he takes on the current champion, Jack Della Maddalena. This card's a banger. I cannot wait, but we do have to get through our little Apex card here. Don't know how much I'm going to be watching it. I'm going to be honest. I work 8 to 5 on Saturday, and then I'm going out with all my coworkers and some of my coworkers' buddies. So might be one of those things where I have to charge my phone, and I kind of just like watch it on the side. But now that I've actually remembered this, I actually do kind of got to cancel ESPN before December, I think 6 it is, because UFC is leaving and we're going to Paramount. But that deal might be in jeopardy if this betting thing gets out of control. I hope that's not the case. So we'll have to see. But yeah, that's all I got for today, ladies and gentlemen. A lot of fun stuff, though, going on in my life in the working world. I do have some aspirations and dreams for this podcast. I'm going to be honest. I really want to start recording it. I really want to, you know, really start other stuff. But since starting this job, I mean, it is a commute. It's a lot of work. But one thing we're not going to make is excuses. So we're going to continue to level up, continue to surprise you, continue to jab you, and continue to deliver banger episodes every single week. Ladies and gentlemen, you have an amazing weekend. You stay safe, and the next time I talk to you, we're going to be recapping the NFL and this little card here, and I have a feeling I might go perfect on all my predictions. Alrighty, I'll catch you guys next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.